Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to American Conservative Radio. I am your host, Tracy Coyle. Tonight we're going to do something we're going to do what everyone else has been doing for the last 2 weeks. Talk about the financial markets. There's been a lot of commentary all across the blogosphere, the mainstream media, and coffee pots all around the country. So there's no sense in us not joining in. Some of our members have been leaving comments and posts on our website, www.AmericanConservativeParty.org. I encourage you to visit and see what conservatives are thinking and saying. And since we are moving to a new one-hour format, I'm going to invite callers to join us. So if you are interested, our call-in number is 646-652-2828. Another thing we're going to change starting tonight is making Bill Hinman a regular part of the show. I know how everybody likes my ramblings on, but I like Bill's counterpoint, so I'm going to welcome him. And then ask him to let me ramble a bit first. Good evening, Bill.
Good evening, Tracy. It's a gorgeous evening here in Northern California.
I'm sorry to hear that. It's freezing around here. 42 degrees. It's going to be 42 degrees tonight. I was out with our new little puppy that we got out in the dog park today. And I'm in shorts and a T-shirt. Boy, was that a mistake today. Well, I'm going to ask you to stand by for a sec. I'm going to ramble on a little bit about things first, and then, you know, let's discuss what's been going on.
Works for me.
In the last couple of hours, I heard that the Senate was going to vote on the bailout bill probably on Thursday. Harry Reid had better hope that he can run the Senate better than Nancy Pelosi has been running the House. Frankly, I hope he runs it just as well. I want to make it clear that I do not support the bailout bill in any shape or form. I have not supported it all along since it was first proposed less than a week ago. Let's cover some of the reasons why I think it's a bad idea. First, we don't need it. I know that sounds odd, given all the things that have been said by people for the last 5 days, including Paulson saying if we don't, it's going to cause a meltdown of the financial markets. But the main reason that people haven't been given that this bailout is necessary is that the system needs to get liquidity back into the banks so they can start loaning again. That's BS. Banks have plenty of cash. They just don't want to lend it because the assets that are being offered as collateral are unknown quantities. Some of the loans can be made, but anything that involves real estate, any real estate right now, is just toxic. And if you don't believe me about the liquidity, the Fed injected over $600 billion in liquidity on Monday, and interest rates went up. You've got to consider this. If I have billions to lend, and I'm competing with others to lend, how am I going to entice you to borrow money from me? I'm going to give you a better rate, right? Well, if all this liquidity existed and rates went up, there's something else wrong. The Fed did what the bailout planned to do. They injected liquidity into the system. The stock market fell because the idea was to offload all the bad loans, not get more money. If the banks and the institutions can't get rid of the bad debts they hold, then all the extra money doesn't really help them. Second reason, Congress is handing the Treasury a checkbook and a mandate with no supervision. If you think I'm wrong that there is supervision built into the plan, please inform me how much supervision Fannie and Freddie had. It might not have been enough, but it certainly wasn't absent. The Democrats have been caught screwing the pooch, and they are doing what they can to cover their butts. Unfortunately, the Republicans appear to have pretty clean hands, but they refuse to play hardball, letting the Democrats hang in the wind. Instead, they're getting around, circling the horses, protecting their political counterparts. The next item is that with all this whining about what happened in the markets after the bill failed, all the people that are reconsidering their no votes because of what the markets did, exactly what did you think was going to happen? The vote would fail. It would be on the news at 6, and then everybody would move on to the next news story the next day? Come on, the bill showed how stupid the administration and Congress think the average citizen is. And the aftermath showed how stupid the administration and Congress are. Victoria and I were 43 and 37 when we got CJ. She was almost 9 months old. She's from China. One of the advantages of being older parents is that you don't get all nuts when things start going crazy. You have some experience and some foundation in dealing with issues. Yes, it was still pretty much on-the-job training, but we weren't kids raising a kid. We were blessed with a smart kid, but we also knew enough not to try and to protect her from every possible bad thing that could happen. For the last 40 years, Congress and most of government have tried to protect Americans from every stupid harm that should be part of our ability to deal with life. Do you remember lawn yarts? They were outlawed because, I think the number was 8. 8 people got killed because they stepped in front of somebody throwing a lawn yard. Now, I don't know about you, but I tend to stay away from people throwing heavy metal objects, like horseshoes. Helmet laws, smoking bans, seatbelt laws are all designed to protect stupid people from doing stupid things. It is the worst example of nanny statism. Congress is trying to protect us again from the real world. Frankly, I want them to stop. I don't need another mother. I have one, and she did a damn fine job letting me eat sandwiches, get all scraped up, fractured a few bones. Okay, it was like 20, but I learned to avoid doing stupid things as a kid, so I don't break things as, okay, well, I've broken some things as an adult, but that was, doing things that I like to do. Apparently, Congress did not have a good mother, and so they don't get that actions have consequences, and when you remove those consequences, there is no reason to avoid stupid actions. If Congress continues to try to protect people from the marketplace, things are going to get a lot worse. I suggested in a post on my blog, by the way, moderatemainstream.blogspot.com, that we are in a recession, and we're going to be in one for a while, unless Congress really screws things up trying to fix things, and then depression may come into play. And let me say that the last month has given me no comfort that Congress or this administration can act like reasonable adults. bill?
Yes.
Do you think that Harry Reid has even a remote chance of running the Senate as well as Nancy Pelosi has run the House?
Well, I can only echo your sentiment, and I hope he does as good a job as Nancy did. I have a little bit of concern in that we've got a lot of squishy, can't call them conservatives, they're really Republicans, but they're squishy, and there is a lot of sentiment, at least on the Hill, to, oh my God, the sky is falling, we have to do something. I'm not convinced, and I haven't read anything so far that convinces me that we are in such dire straits as folks would like us to believe. So when I couple that with the experience that I have in the real world, I'm saying, no, wait a minute, let's stop, let's slow down, let's make sure that we don't do something that we haven't really considered just because we want to do something. One of the worst things that we could do would be to rush through some legislation, and I went through all 109 pages of the bill that the House considered, and I have to tell you, that is one of the most abominable pieces of legislation that I have ever seen. It will not, one, solve the problem. Two, it still gives a blank check to the feds. All of their committees that they set up are composed of the feds. There's no oversight there. There isn't any, wait a second, folks, maybe this isn't such a great idea there. It is a truly abominable piece of legislation. So I'm glad that it failed. If they can put in some new legislation that will actually address the problem, and frankly, I don't think that they need to address it. Warren Buffett came up with $5 billion on his own. Now, if he can do that, how many other people, corporations, have an ability to inject that kind of money into this supposed problem to solve it?
Well, the answer is
there's a lot.
There's a lot of them. And, you know, last night I spent some time thinking about the general concept of the Fed injecting $630 billion worth of liquidity into the market on Monday.
I saw that, yeah.
And I'm sitting here kind of going, okay, we've got this, Congress is trying to pass a bill where they're going to inject $700 billion, and that fails, and the Fed turns around and injects $630 billion, not in a week, not in a month, now, just today, boom, done, over. And I'm starting to think, okay, you know, I've been a pretty big fan of the Fed for a long time. For many years, I received, most people don't know, the Federal Reserve isn't just a banking institution. It just isn't a bunch of people sitting around counting money all day long and handing out money and taking money back in. The Fed actually produces a significant amount of economic research.
Yes.
And some of that research is among the best economic research on the planet. And for years, I got most of the research that was published. And some of it is not for the average layperson. Most of it's not for the average layperson. Most of it's not for the the econ people that have, you know, minor degrees in econ. And I'm talking about bachelor's degrees or master's degrees. Some of the stuff's pretty steep. But you know, I trust that the Fed has a significant number of people that know what the hell they're doing. And when they can turn around in less than a couple of hours, realize what needs to be done and do it, and inject that much liquidity into the market, you know what the Fed is doing. They're protecting their clients, which in this case is not the American people, is not the American government. It's the banks that belong to the Federal Reserve System. And they were protecting the banks. They weren't protecting the loans of the banks. They weren't protecting the people in the banks. They were protecting the deposits in the banks, making sure that if people showed up at the bank and they wanted money out, that the bank went, sure, here it is, no problem. Because if anybody got the idea that somebody said, well, we don't really, we'll give you $100, not the $200 you want, that kind of panic would just send the banks through the floor. So the Fed is protecting their clients, the banks. This liquidity, it was everything that the bailout bill was supposed to do. And it did nothing except for calm a few people from running to the doors. It didn't change the system. It didn't fix the system. It just calmed a few nerves. And that's $630 billion today. The bailout bill will do nothing, absolutely, positively nothing. There has been one thing that I think that they have done. I really didn't want them to do it, but I figured if they did it, they would actually do some good. And that was suspending mark to market. I think it was a bad idea, but I understood why they did it. And it's probably the one thing that actually addresses a root problem that exists in the system right now. Is there something in the bill that you thought was just beyond the lack of supervision? Did you see any of the pork that was supposedly being put into this bill?
Well, actually, I did, and I've had an email conversation going on with my family in regards to this. And my youngest brother turned me on to a site that had what was supposedly the latest word on the bill that was to be considered by the House of Representatives. All of the news reports said ACORN, and for those who aren't familiar with that, ACORN is a community activist type of an organization that does a lot of voter registration, primarily for the Democratic Party, has been convicted multiple times in multiple jurisdictions of registration fraud. And they were supposedly pulled out of the bill. And I'm not real sure if people understand or not, but the federal government has been funding them, primarily at Democratic Party insistence, to the tune of about $500 million. Now, regardless of whether you agree or disagree with that, they were supposedly pulled out of this bill. The draft language that I reviewed said, oh no, they were still there. So I would tell you that the pork has not been pulled out, at least in terms of the draft language that I reviewed.
Well, the bill is wrong from the standpoint, the conservative standpoint, it's wrong from the idea of trying to prevent bad participants from suffering from the consequences of their bad decisions.
Absolutely.
I also spent some time thinking about the markets went down pretty bad, and there are a lot of people that have 401ks and pensions and retirement plans in the markets, and those were going to be impacted. I'll let you speak about that in a moment. But I started thinking about all the people that I know and how the market is going to impact them, and the answer is pretty much not at all. I'm concerned by my parents. My parents are in their mid-70s, and my father's pension is fairly safe. It's with a company and a union, and neither the company, which is it's actually like a government-sponsored entity. It is not something that's going to go away. It's a regional transportation firm. So they're going to actually, if the economy goes to hell in a handbasket, that is actually going to be doing good because fewer people will be driving and more people will be taking public transportation. So his pension is safe in that regard. They are debt-free. They own their own home. They own their own vehicle. They owe no money, no credit cards. So they're safe in that regard. My own business and Victoria's practice will do well in a bad downturn. We're fairly safe. Most of my siblings are okay, even if the economy goes really, really sour. People that I am concerned with, won't really be affected by a bad economy. Now, certain people will say everyone's going to get affected, and I agree. But there's going to be people that are going to be walking the streets because they were hedge fund managers, and nobody's going to be giving anybody any hedge fund money for a long time. They're going to have to go out and find new work in banking at a time when banking is not going to be hiring a lot of people. Those type of people are going to be in trouble. There's going to be a lot of businesses that will go out, especially the luxury businesses. I saw somebody who was having a very difficult time financially, but she managed to spend $70 every other week getting her nails done. And I'm sitting here like going, okay, first of all, you need to stop spending that extra $70 every 2 weeks because there's other things that are more important than that. But it's not just her spending that $70. It's the industry that is supported by her and millions of others like her that spend $70 every other week. It's the $4 coffee industry. It's the $2 bottled water industry. It's the $110,000 Hummer industry. These are places that are going to have big problems, and the people that work in them are going to have their issues. And then I saw something today that just absolutely floored me. Did you hear about new home sales?
They're way down.
Annualized 430,000 units per year. That's what the current new home sales is. Do you know what they reported new housing starts at over the same period?
Huh.
630,000 units.
Oops.
Okay. Here's the problem, folks. If the market is only 400,000 and you're building 600,000 and there's an additional 600,000 already sitting out there that nobody wants to buy, nobody can buy, you're going to flood the market with things that nobody wants. There's only one thing that happens in that regard. Prices go down a lot more.
Amen.
The housing market is a long way from being fixed. And those are people that are going to suffer. Everything that deals with housing is going to suffer. Talk to me about, you're in a different position than I am. With regard to finances, you've gotten a little bit longer in the tooth. How do you see, assuming for a second, I want the economy to actually take a hit. I know that sounds bizarre, but we need to fix certain things, and we can either fix it fast and minimize the amount of time that the pain is going to occur, or we can drag out the pain for a long time. Japan did it for almost a decade, and they're still feeling the repercussions of that. I would rather our economy take a big hit now and fix itself quickly rather than draw this out. But my family is in the position where we can tolerate that kind of situation. What do you think?
You have to understand, my bias is a free market bias. I believe that if you let that market determine values, that we will, over the long haul, we will derive more value out of our economy than otherwise. So that's the bias that I approach this from. I would tell you that my personal position is fairly unassailable. I am not in the market right now. I'm in a cash position. When the market looks like it's going to start to recover, i.e. there's been a capitulation, then I will get back in that market. But one of the things that I think that you have to remember, and it's been all over the news channels today, we supposedly lost $1.1 trillion in value yesterday because of the market plunge by 700 points. Folks, that isn't even in the top 10 in terms of the percentage of market decline. Nowhere close to it. So you need to have a perspective that says, well, yeah, okay, 700 points is a big number, but what does that really mean? The other thing that I found no mention of today in any of the news reports, whether that be any of the mainstream media or Fox News Channel, was how much got recovered today in the 400-point climb. Well, folks, that's a little bit more than half of a recovery in one day. So,
are you suggesting that the Fed's $600 billion injection of liquidity and the market's recouping $600 billion worth of capitalization today isn't enough?
I don't know whether it's enough. I mean, all of my experience has been in the banking industry at the retail level. So I cannot speak authoritatively in terms of the macroeconomics of this. What I can tell you is this. If you are banking with a community bank, not a Wells Fargo, not a Citigroup, not any of those folks, but if you're banking with a community bank, you're golden. You don't have a worry in the world because those folks are not involved in, one, the credit meltdown due to subprime mortgages. They don't need to borrow. They're good. So don't worry about it. You're okay.
Yeah.
You're going to get up tomorrow morning. You're going to go to work. You're going to buy whatever it is that you need to buy tomorrow. You're going to go to the grocery store and get your Cheerios or whatever it is. You're going to be fine. The folks that have to worry are the ones who are in the hedge funds. The folks that have to worry are the ones who say, how is it that we can manipulate the system to maximize our profit and We don't care about the rest of you. Those are the folks that have got to worry, because they're the ones who depend on an ever-rising debt. And folks, debt is not good. And that may sound strange coming from a banker, but I will tell you this, debt is not a good thing. You get into debt only because you're buying something that you cannot take out of current income.
You know, last night I was listening, I was getting dinner ready, and the news was on, and somebody said that to give us an example of how bad the credit markets are, McDonald's couldn't even buy coffee.
Oh, right.
And I'm sitting there like going, wait a second. McDonald's couldn't buy coffee for its restaurants because the credit markets were in such a dire strait. Now, I know a little bit about international trade, and I do know that, you know, if you're going to go buy a container ship worth of goods, somebody wants to know that you have the money to do so.
Yep.
So there is credit documents that are provided in international trade to indicate things, but it's not loans.
Nope.
And if, let's pretend for a second that in fact that this was absolutely true, that McDonald's needed to borrow millions of dollars to buy coffee for its restaurants. Let's think about this for a second. Does that make McDonald's a good corporate, a good corporation to be putting money into right now? If I went to Starbucks today and used my credit card to buy coffee, everyone would think I'm not a very good credit risk. If you're having to borrow money to purchase operating supplies, I think
mm-hmm.
that's a problem.
Yep.
I think if you have to borrow money to make payroll, I think that's a problem.
Absolutely.
And I think those companies need to be weaned off of this idea that they need to have credit to survive. Because I think that's just a really bad way of doing business. Anyways, I stopped in the middle of the kitchen and turned and looked at the TV and went, who is that moron thinking that this was a good example to use?
Exactly. I mean, not to get too technical, but when McDonald's buys coffee, they buy it with cash on hand. They may use a blading, which is a kind of a credit guarantee from their bank to whoever the shipper is. It says, yep, these folks have got the money on hand, and as soon as you can prove that you have put it on a ship and it's on its way, you can have your money. They can operate on a letter of credit. But I will tell you that a letter of credit, that's backed by cash, folks. That is not backed by, oh, if we make enough money, we'll pay you back.
Right. It's not a loan.
Exactly.
It's a letter from a bank saying they've got the money to pay this bill. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And then Bush said something. I tried to find it. He said it either Monday morning or Friday. I don't know when he said it. He said something along the lines of, you know, we need to get these credit markets open so people can buy their gas. And I'm thinking, wait a second.
Yeah.
No. The credit markets to buy gas, not a problem. Your Visa card's going to work just fine in the morning. You know, that's not the issue. You know, and I'm just thinking how much the scaremongering that's going on is just out of the world. And then I started listening to people around the coffee pots and around the water coolers when I've been out and about over the last 2 days. And you would think that the average American would at least have some idea about what's going on. You know, I'm not going to say who said it, but somebody recounted to me, and this is a little bit off topic, but it's specific to the general idea. Somebody recounted to me that Sarah Palin said that she can see Russia from her house. And I went,
That would sharpen your focus a little bit, I would think.
I'm sitting there thinking, like, well, I don't think she would have said something so stupid as that. I mean, she might have said, you know, you can see Russia from Alaska.
Yeah,
that
that's
would make
true.
Sense to me. I mean,
yep.
It's not hard to see across the Bering Sea when the weather is good.
Yep.
You know, it's not that far in there. But then, you know, and I looked at the person and went, you know, I can't call you on this, but that sounds like something really stupid. And then I saw a little blurb about Tina Fey and Saturday Night Live from 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And what did Tina Fey say at Saturday Night Live? She said, I can see Russia from my house. And I'm sitting there thinking about this person who I consider to be pretty well-informed and pretty smart. You know, you're repeating a comedian's line and attributing it to a vice presidential candidate.
Mm-hmm.
How stupid do you think you are?
Exactly.
And that's my problem at this point, is that the president and Paulson and Congress and all these people that are screaming that this bill has to be done are repeating comedy lines and expecting people to believe that what they're saying is the truth. It's
exactly.
real. And it's not. It's a punchline. It's ridiculous. Come on.
I find myself yelling at the TV a lot lately over the last three, four days over the weekend.
I haven't been yelling. I've been looking at it like, huh?
Yeah, right.
Huh?
the latest thing is apparently Senator Obama and Senator McCain, just to be fair here, have said, oh gosh, we need to put the FDIC insurance up to $200,000 or $250,000 per account. And I thought to myself, and I yelled at the TV at both of them, and I said, folks, that's not your problem. That is not the problem. Nobody that I know of keeps that kind of money in a checking account. Nobody. If they have that kind of money, they have it in a money market fund of some sort. This problem is not, oh gosh, we need to insure more deposits. That's simply a way to raise costs to the bank. This is a matter of what is the real problem? How do we solve that? My personal bias is that we let the market correct itself. Does that mean we're going to have some pain? Absolutely. No matter who gets elected, no matter what kind of bill passes the Congress, we're going to have pain. We are going to be in a recession. The question is it going to be a mild recession? Is it going to be a medium depression? I'm sorry, recession. Or is it going to be a deep recession? That's the only question that's out there. There is nothing that the feds can do, that Congress can do, that will alleviate the problem of overvalued real estate. Nothing.
Right. Well, if they want to actually solve things, what they need to do is they need to prove to everyone that all of the real estate that has liens against it are, in fact, worth more than the liens that are on it.
Exactly.
And if all the suggestion is that real estate is down 10 to 15%, and that's kind of why I said, you know, we might get down as much as 30%. And I'm sitting there going, there's places in this country that pass 30% over the summer.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And they're on their way much farther down. I mean, there's places in California, especially in the Inland Empire and such areas that I pay a certain amount of attention to, where housing prices are 50 and 60%. Down from their highs.
Yes.
You know, and if you have a loan for $200,000 on a $250,000 house that you bought 2 years ago, and that house is down 50%, and you've got a $200,000 loan, and your house is now worth about $140,000, you know, it takes, in order to make, to reinsure that lien, you know, $60,000 or $70,000 in the bank, assuming that the real estate doesn't go down any farther. If our real estate market is down 10 or 15%, and I personally think 30% is not going to be a bad number nationwide average, that we need to come down. You and I have talked about it in the past. I have looked at the median family income, compared that to the median family home price. 40 states, it's well above. 30% is probably where we need to be to get those numbers more in line with where things are. Well, I don't know. What's the residential real estate market worth? $10 trillion? You know, 30% drop of $10 trillion is $3 trillion bucks.
Yep.
Well, you know, $700 billion doesn't go anywhere near $3 trillion. You know, and trying to hold prices up artificially, which is what they'd be trying to do, is, in fact, the worst thing they could possibly do. And it would cost us an arm and a leg to do it. And it would only happen as long as the money sat there. As soon as the government tried to pull back in any way, you know, prices would crash even worse. Instead of, they've been going down at a pretty steady 1 or 2% a month clip for the last 18 months. That's a good way of getting it to drop 30% in, you know, 3 months. I just find the entire concept of the bailout bill wrongheaded. We have about 15 minutes left. I want to stop on the financial.
Okay.
First of all, I think you and I agree, bailout bill, and most conservatives agree, bailout bill, really bad idea.
Absolutely.
And yes, we understand, for all you people that don't think that we're stupid, we understand very well that the economy is going to take a hit. And in my personal case, I believe it needs it. The economy is out of whack at this point. Asset prices are way out of line. They need to be more consistent with incomes. And until that gets fixed, that imbalance gets fixed, nothing else can work. So I'm looking for that hit. And yes, I understand the pain and suffering that that's going to cause to many, many people. Well, you know, it's going to happen anyways. Whether it happens over the next 6 months or it happens over the next 6 years, it's going to happen. I'd rather get it over it in the next 6 years. Okay, so bailout bill, you know, dead in the water, bad idea. Done.
Okay.
Hey, all right. In 2 days, the vice presidential debate is going to be held, in which Sarah Palin will take on bloviator, preemptor.
Slow Joe.
I'm using words I shouldn't be using. The biggest blowhard in the Senate will be on a stage with Sarah Palin. Frankly, I think she's going to clean his clock. I think he's going to get so, what's the word I want to use? He is going to be so condescending to her that the worst feminist you can think of is going to start yelling at him. I don't think he can stop himself. I think he is going to treat her like a 17-year-old cheerleader, and when he does, I think she's going to nail him behind the back of the ear, and he won't know what hit him.
That is certainly a possibility. One of the things that I really appreciate about Governor Palin is she says what she thinks. And I am so tired of politicians who look me in the eye and lie to me and say, and isn't that right? You know, I may not agree with you, Mr. or Mrs. Politician, but please don't lie to me. Don't tell me something that I know not to be true. You may say something that I disagree with, and I will disagree with you. But that's fine. I don't have you don't have to agree with me. I don't have to agree with you. But please don't lie to me. And I think for all of the bad press that Governor Palin has gotten in regard to her supposed gaffes, is a person who tells you what is on her mind. And I'm saying, thank you. I may or may not agree with it, but thank you for telling me what it is that you actually believe, not feeding me a line of BS.
Yeah,
that's kind of the end of my rant there.
No, you know, what I was going to say a week ago and didn't get a chance to say was that, you know, that both parties have gotten fully into the mud pit.
Yep.
I don't think McCain is as bad as Obama, but, you know, I'm not seeing everything that's being run. Obviously, Wisconsin, where I am, is considered right now in play, so we're getting a fair amount of attention from both parties, from both candidates. I mean, Obama has been, or Michelle has been, in the states, I would say every other week or so for the last 6-8 weeks. Both Palin and McCain have been in the state twice. But, you know, the left has left no stone unturned in their attempt to climb out from under.
Yep.
You know, the right's snippy little remarks, you know, I suggested bore a close resemblance to Snidely Whiplash. And the caricature is not appealing. You know, it's, I would rather see Sarah Palin come out swinging and landing a few ill-conceived but highly accurate blows on O'Biden or O'Biden. Oh,
yeah.
On Biden or Obama, and McCain just sit there and smile. Not try to excuse it, not try to cover, not try to minimize it, just sit there and smile about it. You know, the problem I see with the left's idea that Sarah Palin lacks experience is that every single argument they use against her applies in spades to Obama.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, anything they say about her applies to him. He's at the top of the ticket. She's just the VP, you know, and Biden, I can't imagine, you know, I didn't watch a whole lot of the Democratic, did you watch the Democratic debates this spring?
I saw a little bit of them, not a lot, and I saw enough to say, okay, there's not really a dime's worth of difference, so this is going to be a technical kind of a run, and obviously
my question is, I mean, did Biden show anything in the debates in the spring that would suggest that he's going to be able to handle a debate one-on-one with Palin at all?
He really has a problem in that he has to fill space. I mean, for whatever reason, he has, when there's a silence, he has to fill it. And unfortunately for him, when he does that, he says some of the dumbest things that you can think of. I mean, his whole shtick about, oh gosh, when the Great Depression hit, that FDR got on television and talked to the people. Well, first off, it was Herbert Hoover that was in office at the time, and folks, there weren't a lot of people that had televisions at the time. Nobody was doing television interviews. So he has this problem that he's got to fill space, and when he fills space, he says some really dumb stuff. He does.
She might be really smart in, you know, when she has 2 minutes to say something, to use about a minute and 40 seconds of it, and then turn to him and go, "What do you think?" I just think that, you know, if she can be concise, land a few blows, you know, on the Democrats in particular, Obama specifically, and then give Biden lots of rope, I think he'll hang himself left, right, and center.
I agree with that. Well, I have been following the Puma Pack, and that's Party Unity My Ass, and they've got a website, and these are primarily women who supported Hillary that believe, for whatever reasons, that Hillary got cheated out of the nomination. They are adamantly, without question, with no quarter asked or given, opposed to an Obama presidency. You ought to go visit them. Frankly, most of them talk conservative principles, smaller government, open and transparent, adhere to the Constitution, all of the things that we believe in, and yet they're Democrats. And I'm saying, well, you know, maybe we ought to be reaching out to those folks because they are opposed to the person that we are opposed to, and they have a lot of energy. So I'm thinking about saying, okay, let me make some comments on their blog and see what kind of a response we get. But I would agree with you. I think that Senator Biden is going to do what he habitually does, because it's very hard to change that when you have a pattern established, and he has a lot of years in the Senate of establishing that pattern. It is very hard to break that. It is particularly hard to break that when you are in the midst of a debate. So he will come out with some things that politically he ought not to say. And I am hoping, don't know if it's going to happen, but I'm hoping that Governor Palin says, well, now, wait a minute. Back here you said this, now you're saying that. Which is it that you actually believe?
That's the end of my rant. Yeah, I'm not so much worried about the general idea of her catching him, you know, in some kind of flip-flop or some kind of chain, stuff like that. You know, I don't think that that's where it's going to go. I think we're going to have a whole bunch of sound bites. We didn't have very many sound bites out of the debate on Friday. I think we're going to have lots of sound bites coming out of this debate. I think it's going to come from both sides. I think it's going to be positive on Sarah's. Maybe I'm just being really optimistic. Maybe I'm being really, you know, blind to things, but I don't think so. You know, the problem with Sarah Palin is not her lack of experience, at least as far as the left is concerned. It's from their perspective, it's her apparent lack of judgment. I don't know where that comes from. You know, but the means by which they judge her is not an objective standard, but by how she stands on their pet peeves. You know, if she's against nationalized health care, well, that's an indication of poor judgment.
Right.
Never would they think that a good, solid principle could underlie that position and therefore be an indicator of good judgment. I mean, they just don't even think about it that way. The lack of objective standards is just not in their evaluation of her or in any conservative position. You know, it really doesn't matter that it was Sarah Palin. It could have been any conservative. But a woman, you'd think that the left would be all over themselves happy about a woman, you know, being in this position. You know, but it's just the left and the press are just so into Obama that they're not thinking straight. They're not being objective at all. And going into this debate, you know, I heard it this evening. The bar has been set pretty low for Sarah Palin. Why?
Exactly.
She's been in debates, and she's a pretty damn good politician. You know, frankly, I think the bar has been set pretty low for Biden's benefit rather than Palin's benefit. You know,
it always amazes me when people say that, because she is a governor of a state that is, one, far-flung, two, has fairly poor, well, I don't know that they've got poor communications, but they certainly have a poor ability to get from one part of a state of the state to another. She has, from all of the reports that I've seen, an 80% plus approval rating, and you're trying to tell me that, well, the left is trying to tell me that this is a person that doesn't have any political skills? I'm sorry, that does not compute. There's a disconnect there someplace.
She's been governor for, what, 21 months, something like that, 20, 22 months?
Something like that.
You know, almost 2 years as governor, and she's got an 80% approval rating. You know,
exactly.
I don't know of any politician that can that gets a 20-month honeymoon.
Particularly a conservative politician.
Right. You know, and so she's doing things that are making people happy. You know.
Yep.
It's just going to be rather interesting to watch. I'm looking forward to it. We watched the debates on Friday. I got really mad at McCain with his very first answer. You know, Obama gave him a perfect opportunity to just ream into the Democrats on the bailout bill and on Fannie and Freddie, and he just let it go by. And I'm sitting there like going, man, these are the types of opportunities you have got to take to just go after him.
That is so frustrating to me. I mean, it is absolutely clear to me, at least, as to what the root cause of this current problem is. And every time that Republicans tried to put something in place that would perhaps help to fix that, Democrats blocked it. Now, I, in terms of economics, I try to stay neutral in terms of the politics of that situation. But it seems to me if you've got one party that blocks attempts to fix a problem and you aren't willing to point that out, then I have to wonder what's going on there. Because it doesn't make sense to me that you would say, oh, well, there's enough blame to go around for everybody. I'm sorry, no, the majority of the blame is on Barney Frank, Chris Dodd, Nancy Pelosi, all of those people. Go ahead.
Gotta go.
Gotta go.
Talk again next week.
Cross market.
We'll get to it. See you next week.
See ya.
Bye.